Good morning, Janet.
Good morning, Tara.
It's a beautiful day
in Montana.
Oh, yay.
You have more beautiful days in New Orleans than we've had this spring. We've had so much rain, which is a blessing.
Oh, well, you need it so you don't get the forest fires.
That's right. Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Well, what is on your mind today?
Well, you know, there's lots of good things happening. It's wonderful to have my feeling starting to feel better and be able to function. I'm driving for the first time in about a year.
You are?
Yeah. I don't go take long trips or whatever, but because my head still doesn't feel, I can see pretty well and function pretty well, but it still knows that there's numbness in there. The nerves are, I can almost feel them trying to come back.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's that sense of being a bit physically handicapped or mentally handicapped, just because of that. And the whole, you know, it has been so humbling, and such an important lesson that I've had to learn, because it really has taken me out of the realm of what is reality, what is expectations, how do things work, how should they work, all of the stories and expectations that I've had have been changed by the reality of what it means to live and try to keep weight on, much less put it back, when you can't chew well, you can't taste, and you can't even eat the things that would taste good that would make it interesting or worthwhile.
Wow.
And so it really is put me in a totally different relationship with my body.
Mm-hmm.
That has put me in touch with the magnitude of the separation I thought was normal between me and my body.
And just something that you lived with your whole life and it just was so familiar to you, you didn't even see it?
Well, I just think I think that's sort of most of the people I know don't have that relationship with their body. It's
right.
Sort of like you know, the body is the vehicle that you drive around in.
And you have to fuel it occasionally so that it'll keep going. And
right. Right, yeah. And it has to be fed, so you need to have the gasoline. It has to be oiled, greased. but when I reflect on the resistance to changing our physical habits,
mm-hmm.
and that study, 9 out of 10 people would rather die than change, and how much more attached we are to the physical self than the emotional self, and the mental is the one that that has me playing the games. And for me to finally begin to open my heart and get in touch with the emotional self has been a huge challenge and a bit traumatic, because you start to feel things you don't want to feel.
Mm-hmm.
And remember things you don't want to remember and see things that are too painful.
Do you want to elaborate on that? Are there certain things that have been really up for you lately, feelings that are uncomfortable or insights that are uncomfortable to have?
Well, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember Arai had said you're almost too sensitive to be in third dimension.
You're almost what?
You're almost too sensitive to be in third dimension.
Right.
Was what Raya had said. And
mm-hmm.
And now, last night, simply watching the news and watching, there's a water shortage in India.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a great big, you know, water truck driving into this, I guess, I don't know whether it was slum or semi-slum, but an area. And the people were, you know, just, oh, my gosh, water, water, we've got to have water. And it was just so pathetic.
Heartbreaking.
And it's all I could do, not just to burst into tears. You know, because what this has brought me to is this level of compassion for everybody. And my friend Jill, I were talking, and she has had her own physical problems. She had that bacteria C. diff, which I had, which is, oh, my Lord, that really ruins your intestinal tract. It's awful. It's hard to get rid of. And then she had an automobile accident. She said, Janet, the one thing I'll say about all this is it has made me a lot more compassionate. It has made me a much softer person.
Wow.
And I thought, isn't that a sad thing that we've got to get to be old and sick?
Well, that, you know what? There's a lot to be, a lot of wisdom in what you just said. I'm sure you know that, well, we were just talking earlier about the Dalai Lama and his teachings about how to cultivate compassion. And, you know, that there are certain practices you can do to actually cultivate that in yourself. And it sounds like what you're saying is, and just the aging process, if you're present with it, will cultivate it.
Well, you know something? That certainly is, it could be the case. It's certainly not the case for everybody.
Yeah. You know. I feel like if you're present to it, if you're present with it, which you have been, then that is the outcome.
Which I thought was interesting as you were explaining to me where that is in my chart.
Where the compassion?
Well, where that process for being able to be reflective and to go inside is. And was that in the seventh house?
Eighth house, of which is actually the house of death and rebirth, you have your Mercury retrograde there. And what I was saying was that gives you the ability to look back upon things that have occurred in the past and be discerning about those things, to sort of extrapolate the meaning out of them. That's sort of the higher octave of Mercury retrograde. Of course, we've talked about the lower octave being that your computer's constantly melting down. All kinds of problems with technology. But there's always that higher manifestation. And then also what I shared with you earlier, your Mercury retrograde taps into the grand square in your chart, which involves Pluto, Uranus, Saturn, and Mars. You don't get a much more challenging grand square than that. And the fact that the Uranus and Pluto are also both retrograde, it contributes to your ability to, you know, look back and gain wisdom from the past, historically as well, not just within your own life, you know?
Yeah.
But I was saying, I think that you're one of those people who, right now we're having this series of Uranus square Pluto transits over the next 3 years, which are transforming the world. But in your own life and your own personal experience, you have that going on all the time inside you.
It explains why I founded that urban policy think tank in Chicago and ran that for 15 years. But it's sort of like where this concern that is sort of innate in me about the collective and about the problems of humanity, and concern for the bigger picture, I guess you could say, which a lot of people just aren't bothered by, and I can't ignore.
Right.
You
really can't. You're hooked into it. The personal and the transpersonal are completely connected in with your chart, the way it's set up.
Yeah.
So that you are, for you, the personal is the political.
Yeah.
And vice versa,
And it's and so it's making what I'm seeing around me in the world, and all these unemployed people, and the stress in their lives, and the veterans that are coming back from these wars, and you know, with illnesses and physical limbs taken off, and you know.
Yeah.
That, to me, is heartbreaking.
Yeah.
And there's good reason for not allowing that heart, my heart to open to that degree to feel that, because this is too darn painful.
I see, yeah. And yet you're doing it more and more.
Well, I am. And I guess that is the other part is that you know, from, 1970 or something, I would get mad at my seminary friends, trained friends, and say, you stand there in the pulpit and you tell me to love my neighbor as myself and you're not showing me how.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been angry about the inconsistency between commandments and
mm-hmm.
help in learning how to live them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, there's just, I'm looking and I'm feeling so frustrated about the ineffectiveness of what I've been taught.
Mm-hmm.
And I think so much of the world has been taught to fulfill what those commandments or what they are saying. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's sort of like the Ten Commandments haven't been effective. Let's face it. And laws are not effective. Human behavior is human behavior, and no matter how much we try to impose on it,
mm-hmm.
it has very well. And I'm saying, you know, the only real change is going to be change from within. The
mm-hmm.
only way we're going to stop being corrupt and stop
mm-hmm.
being brutal and stop being addicted and stop being, you know, whether it's to food and obese and alcohol or sex or whatever, is from within.
Mm-hmm.
And so how do we give people, every individual, the support and love and what is needed so they can find their true selves and become and learn what they're here to become and learn? And that would be my wish, but it's very idealistic. And I also have to sort of accept the fact that everybody's here for the different reason. And, you know, maybe they've got part of the reason is to experience the negative. And that gets into a whole other realm of who we are and why we're here and my own sort of change in my understanding
And it gets back to your astrological chart as well, because, like you're saying, you can only work on yourself. You can only, there's only one person you can really do anything about, and that's you, right?
Right.
And if you do that and everyone else does that, then it's not that we can't all reach out a helping hand to one another, because we can, and you know, ideally we do, but ultimately it's each of us, it's our responsibility for how we work within ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And how we evolve. And in your chart, you know, you have that beautiful Venus, Sun, Neptune conjunction also in your eighth house of deep transformation. And that configuration is all about love and being here to evolve to the highest, most unconditional form of love. But that would be your priority. That would be why you're here.
And that feels so right on the market. I found it so difficult to do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was what I felt I needed to explore and have
mm-hmm.
gotten closer and closer and closer. And I think I'm, you know,
mm-hmm.
ever closer in what it takes. But it is still, why is it so difficult? And it's sort of because it hurts so much to get there.
Mm-hmm. Sort of like your heart is like a birth canal that has to open in order to give birth to love, right? And so there are labor pains involved in that, and involved in the opening of the heart,
yeah,
the dilating of the heart chakra. that's exactly what's required. Just as you know, birth was not an easy thing. Giving birth isn't easy. Being born isn't easy. And yet, it's what we all have to do to get here.
Yeah, and to sort of change my sense of what is this all about, and accepting that this is the only story I've found that feels comfortable. That this planet in third dimension is a school for the soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that it is it gives my soul to have an opportunity to experience in physicality, in time-space continuum, in cause and effect, things that would not be possible to experience in other dimensions, I don't think.
Right. This is what I've seen and learned from you, is that it feels like you're embracing the most challenging experiences of your life, which are occurring right now through your body as your teacher. You're embracing these lessons of physicality. You're actually using them in the way that was intended as a school for your soul. You're actually doing it.
Well, it's sort of like my choice is what? I mean, here I am.
To be or not to be.
I guess that's it.
To be here or not to be here, that is the question.
Yeah, and to make the most of this opportunity is, and as Mark said, yeah, but what you're here for is going to be forthcoming in the next 3 to 4 years, so... Think, oh, shoot, all right, I'll have to hang around for that, I suppose. And that means just this business of learning to surrender and letting go. And stop thinking about how things ought to be and just accepting things as they are and trying to have compassion for it. And, you know, it's so hard not to get impatient and annoyed and all the stupidity you see and the cruelty you see. But along with the kindness, there's, you know, times like these can bring out the best or the worst in it.
And what do you see when you look at, out into the world these days? Do you see both of them? Yeah.
Yeah. And unfortunately, what hits the news tends to be more often than the negative. But it's sort of like we don't change until we have to, and then it's a choice of whether to or whether not to, which is what I experienced. But on the news this morning, and today is the first day of spring when we're doing this, summer.
Summer.
And it's a very significant day and a significant time, and the news was saying our Federal Reserve is doing what it can do, but it can't influence Europe. And Europe could be, you know, things go too south in Europe, they could affect us. And we could affect the whole world economy. And that is a very serious thing. But what this is, I'm looking at this and saying, As a species, we have experienced the all. As you know, I've had lifetimes probably all around the world, and that's what your DNA showed, certainly the predominant parts of it. But I had a Chinese lifetime, and we have these idealized images. And we have idealized myself. I've idealized my country. I've idealized democracy and capitalism. And you know, we've been so carried away with our capitalism is so superior to communism and socialism. And I mean, what are your measuring tools to come to that conclusion? Are you saying that it's superior? Why? Because the rich can get so rich and make a lot of people poor. And so I see that things are at a point where they can get a whole lot worse, and then we're really going to have to think seriously about making the changes in governance. And in how every single one of our systems, I mean, the healthcare system is broken. Totally, you know, the medical pharmaceutical industrial complex and all these pills I've been taking that really weren't making me well. But the insurance companies won't insure the kind of people that are making me well, or in the pharmaceutical industry is trying the supplements that are keeping me healthy to the degree that they are, and so there's these big battles of control going on for profit, for money, for material well-being, at the expense of emotional and well-being, and emotional well-being is gone, so is the physical well-being.
Right. And so, you know, listening to what you're saying, I'm thinking about this adage, you know, as above, so below, or that the microcosm and the macrocosm are, you know, reflections of one another, the outer world and the inner world, and how could anyone living in this world not experience some level of dis-ease within their bodies as a reflection of what's going on in the world?
Absolutely.
And maybe think about this, that the cancer in your brain, what is that reflecting from the outer world? You know, what is it a reflection of?
Well, and the growth of cancer in spite of all the cancer treatments. And there are many cancer treatments that have not been allowed because you know, it's a big business. They really want to find a cure? Not based on what I've read and what I've experienced.
And cancer is all about uncontrolled growth, right?
Yeah.
That's what it is on a cellular level. So that's
and
what we're seeing.
It feeds on sugar.
It feeds on sugar. Yeah, interesting. And that's what's going on in the world, is that there's uncontrolled growth, and, of course, that's wreaked havoc with the ecosystem. And it's been fed by addictive, you know, processes, right?
Absolutely. When you look at the documentaries like Food Inc. and others that show how the food agricultural business and the food industry, they have literally appealed to our desire for sweetness, and then it's made us sick, and the obesity problems we're seeing are so huge that takes advantage of our desire for things that we don't get enough of.
Right. So what we're really all longing for, and this goes back to the talk about love, what we're really all longing for is love. Mm-hmm. That's who we are, and that's where we come from, and that's where we're headed back toward. And yet we're given all these fake substitutes for love. We're given, you know, cotton candy instead of the real meal of what it is we really long for.
It's very simplistic, but I have really concluded that most of the problems that I see around us are based upon compensations for inadequate love.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that sometimes the most simplistic truths are the most profoundly true. You know, just because it's simple doesn't mean it isn't true, right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. And that's an learning opportunity for being here on planet Earth.
And do you feel like you're more loving with yourself this last year of intense challenge with your body? Do you feel more loving?
Yes, I'm more appreciative, respectful.
Mm-hmm.
I still find my greatest vulnerability or weak spot is I melt down with a compliment. I am very, very vulnerable and sort of not receptive. You know, sort of like anybody says anything nice to me, I say, that's hogwash.
I don't notice you doing that as much these days. You know?
Well, good. That's progress. Wonderful.
I mean, I notice you taking it in more. letting it settle in.
Yeah, and isn't that something that the Dalai Lama talked about, Western people with this sort of feeling of unworthiness? Or
true. When he first encountered us, you know, I've talked about this before, when he first came to the West, started working with U.S., not devotees, but people who are interested in Buddhism, he found that this low self-esteem was the major obstacle, and a lot of what he considered self-hatred was the biggest obstacle to cultivating compassion and wisdom within ourselves. And he was really, he was actually in tears about it. It was so painful for him to try to be with that, you know.
Well, I once I've tuned into it in myself, I see it all around me, and I see it in others. And it's sort of like that sense of worthiness.
Right. And I think that's part of the value of traveling or being in touch with other cultures, is that you do notice different patterns of ego development that are culturally influenced. And I've been around quite a few Tibetan people, and whenever I am, I notice how much self-love they seem to have, that it just seems innate. I'm always just kind of amazed by it.
Well, you know, I thought that film or documentary, The Economics of Happiness, was exemplary of that, because it really does matter. And
could you say a little bit about that documentary? Probably most people haven't seen it. I don't think I have.
Well, I will send you a copy. But it is a wonderful, wonderful film by Helena Norberg Hodge, Stephen Gorlick, and John Page. And it's they also made the award-winning documentary Ancient Futures, Learning from Ladakh.
Oh, okay. And so they study the Tibetan people then? Or does it involve?
Yeah, Economics of Happiness reveals how globalization is accelerating climate change, destroying jobs, fraying the fabric of our communities, and adding to the stress of modern life. And it shows how this can be reversed. Stunning footage and thought-provoking commentary from thinkers and activists on every continent, the film demonstrates that a better world is not only possible, it's within our reach.
Well, maybe we can put a link to that documentary within this podcast.
That would be good, wouldn't it?
I think that would be wonderful.
Yeah.
And I'm noticing we're at that 30-minute mark that we always try to stay under here with our talks.
Let's do that, and it's always a treat, Tara. And I'm very excited about the new podcast you put on our page. So,
oh yeah, thank you. I'm very excited myself. And okay, so we will link this up with The Economy of Happiness for people who would like to explore that in more detail. Is it a long documentary or?
I really don't know. Let's see if I can. It's a full-length film.
Okay. All right. Well, I'm sure it's worth the time. For
65 minutes.
65 minutes. That's not a lot of time to spend to invest in your own happiness.
That's right.
All right. Well, talk again soon.
Great.
Okay. Love you.
Love you.